pee in this cup?" The stern doctor sat behind the desk in her dim beige office, under-illuminated by a metal desk lamp fitted with a bulb that cast a dull glow over everything and seemed to have been last changed when de Gaulle was president. She handed me a paper receptacle that felt like it was made of newsprint and averted her eyes. Somewhat. It had been 8 exasperating months since I'd signed the first promesse de vente, and finally, I was close to the day when I would sign the acte de vente, the deed to my apartment in Paris. Or, as time-pressed Parisians shorten it, l'appart. And here I was. The last act I had to do was just relax. Which, considering the circumstances, being vaguely scrutinized by a doctor while standing in the middle of her cabinet, anxiously trying to fill a paper cup that threatened to crumple in my free hand, is not an easy task. Maybe if I'd had a grand café crème beforehand, or better yet, a big glass of rosé, I thought, while she and I waited for me to breathe a shudder of relief so she could go home and I could get the final approval on my bank loan. We were in the same position. Well, not literally. Waiting for the same thing. She'd already taken a blood sample and rigorously checked my vital signs to make sure I was in the bonne santé required by the French bank to approve my mortgage. I'd applied for a few mortgages before in the United States, but a medical screening had never been part of the approval process. I was puzzled until a banker explained it to me. "Monsieur Leibovitz, we don't want you to die." Which was something I couldn't disagree with. They wanted confirmation that I would live long enough to pay for the place. Later, I learned that they had good reason to worry, because that almost didn't happen. I urgently needed to complete this final task before they'd release the funds for the loan, and I could finally take possession of the apartment I'd spent years looking for. Ever since my arrival in Paris a decade earlier, I had been living in a charming chambre de bonne, one of the minuscule top-floor apartments tucked just under the curving roof of a blocky yet regal Haussmannian building in the Bastille Quarter of Paris. Chambres de bonne are single rooms where the maids, les bonnes, once lived. Nowadays, they're sought after by Parisians because they are often the cheapest places to buy, especially the ones in buildings without elevators. Which is why you rarely see Parisians needing to engage in the unsightly spectacle of le jogging. Although I'd recently spotted one woman running in the Tuileries doing her laps in espadrilles. Other advantages are the spectacular views, and best of all, there are no neighbors in heels clomping around above you. In Paris, the more high-strung the woman, the higher the heels, which I know from first-hand experience. And not just from one of the many narrow misses I've had with them playing the Parisian version of chicken, not sure if they call it poulet, on the sidewalks to see who will move first. I've learned that holding a baguette and swinging it parallel to the ground just below waist level gets anyone you're up against to move first. But because there was one living below me who was so hyperactive that I could hear her racing around at all hours, most often between 1 and 4:30 in the morning, when her heels resonated so loudly that the noise woke me up a full floor above her. Another thing that made it hard to sleep in that apartment was the weather, though I didn't mind staying awake, listening to the pounding thunderstorms that lashed down on Paris. The pelting rain in the fall and winter drowned out the traffic noises on the busy boulevard below and would eventually soothe me to sleep. But come summer, sleeping, or doing anything else, became impossible as the temperature soared under the zinc roof, which I lived directly beneath, to as high as 110 degrees Fahrenheit. The only upside was that I had a lot of pre-melted chocolate always on hand. The chambres de bonne were built to house the help, so were intentionally Spartan. The apartments didn't have kitchens, and some had separate back staircases, so the domestics could discreetly slip into the family's apartment without having to pass through the front door. Bathrooms were shared Turkish toilets in the hallways. So, next time you're in Paris and lusting over a rooftop apartment listed in a real estate agency window, check to see if there is a bathroom and an elevator, unless you don't mind climbing up 7 flights of stairs. More and more of the buildings do have elevators now, but many still share one bathroom with everyone else on the floor. And speaking of floors, they're often Turkish toilets, which consist of a hole in the floor with 2 places to stand your ground. Fortunately, my landlord had previously lived in the apartment, so I wasn't sharing any bathrooms, which was good for my neighbors considering the length of time it was taking for me to finalize my real estate transaction. Sure, the chambres de bonne are charming, or cozy, as they'd say in American real estate lingo, but most are just a single room, 200 to 300 square feet, 18 to 28 square meters, or roughly the size of an American kitchen. I tried to buy the apartment I had been living in because it was incredibly well situated. My place had been joined with another chambre next door, so I actually had 2 rooms, which made all my other friends who lived in a chambre de bonne, singular, jealous. It also had a phone booth-size elevator that I took for granted, until it broke. I was crammed in there when it malfunctioned and barely managed to crook my elbow to lift the emergency phone to my ear to call the elevator company. Eventually, someone picked up, but the woman on the other end told me to call back in 2 hours because all the repair people were at lunch. Then she hung up. I broke the door to get out, which I didn't get punished for, but walking up 7 flights of stairs for the next 4 months was definitely punishment enough.